and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here across the nation from Atlanta, Georgia. Well, technically I'm down in Macon, but don't hold that against me. Home of the Allman Brothers. You can't hate that. The phone number, if you would like to be a part of the program, is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Texas Monthly has a big story that we need to spend some time with because it's not really about Texas. It purports to be about Texas. I was actually intrigued by this Jack Herrera story in Texas Monthly. Let me give you the title and the subtitle. Why Democrats Are Losing Texas Latinos. Subtitle. The party assumes people of color will turn the state blue, but most Tejanos consider themselves white and more are voting Republican. This is how it begins. In an interview with Javier Villalobos in early June, Fox Business host Stuart Varney presented his guest with a riddle. Villalobos, a Republican, had just won the mayoral election in McAllen, the Texas border town at the end of the last green curve of the Rio Grande. Varney, barely containing his glee, wanted the politician to help viewers understand the victory. Your Honor, Varney addressed Villalobos, you are right on the border. 85% of the voters in your county are Hispanic. You are a Republican and you won. Can you explain that? Because not many Americans expect a Hispanic electorate to go for a Republican mayor. Villalobos promptly set Varney straight. I think a lot of people know or should know that Hispanics generally are very conservative. His triumph, he explained, wasn't stunning. He had simply met his voters where they were with a conservative agenda of low taxes, limited government spending, and pro-business policies. Satisfied, Varney moved on to other questions familiar to South Texans who make national news. What did Villalobos think of the border wall? What about illegal entry of immigrants? What are migrants? The part of the interview should have been routine, but Varney had apparently not learned the name of the town where Villalobos had been elected, mistakenly and repeatedly referring to McAllen as McLaurin. The error was par for the course. South Texas lately has become an object of political fascination for pundits, some of whom have not taken the time to understand even the most basic facts about the region. Until recently, officials from McAllen typically found themselves on the national radar only when they welcomed visiting national politicians. But Villalobos' win, albeit in a race in which his party affiliation did not appear alongside his name on the ballot, and fewer than 10,000 of the city's 73,000 registered voters went to the polls, was noteworthy for one reason. It seemed to confirm what Democrats had spent the last 7 months denying. They had deep trouble in South Texas and therefore in statewide races as well. Last year, McAllen experienced the biggest shift in party vote share toward Donald Trump of any large city in the county, save for Laredo, 150 miles to the northwest. In other border towns, Trump improved on his 2016 results by more than 23 points. Many predominantly Hispanic neighborhoods in Texas's major cities, such as San Antonio's Prospect Hill, also experienced double-digit shifts towards the incumbent president, though they ultimately stayed Democratic. But no area fled further into the GOP camp than South Texas, where 18% of the state's Hispanic population lives. In Starr County, just upriver from McAllen, Republicans increased their turnout by almost 300% from 2016 and 2020. While Hillary Clinton won there by 60 points, Joe Biden barely scraped out a 5-point victory. In Webb County, home of Laredo, Trump cut his 2016 margin of defeat by more than half. And in Zapata County, which didn't even have a local Republican party, Trump became the first Republican presidential candidate to win since Warren G. Harding was on the ballot a century ago. Why? Well, there are a couple of things that you need to first point out. Notice how the author at the beginning says Hispanic and goes through Hispanic and then shifts immediately thereafter. And the title talks about Hispanic or Latino and the shift between Hispanic and Latino. No one's saying Latinx. Let me read you this paragraph. Tejanos are more comfortable calling themselves white than are Hispanic Americans elsewhere in the country. On recent censuses, respondents were asked their ethnicity, Hispanic or Latino, and their race. While many Hispanic Americans use Hispanic to describe their race and ethnicity, the census differentiates between the two categories. After all, someone who is Hispanic, descended from inhabitants of a Spanish-speaking country, could be of any race. Latin Americans with indigenous heritage could mark American Indian as their race, and hundreds of thousands of Latinos could check black. Some could check other races. On the 2010 census, 53% of Americans who answered that they were Hispanic or Latino also marked their race as white. Last year in Starr County, where 96% of respondents were Hispanic, almost 99% identified as white. On paper, that means the county isn't just one of the most Hispanic in the country, it's also one of the whitest. There is this thing I noticed that Republicans tend to talk about Hispanics. Democrats tend to talk about Latinos. Progressives tend to talk about Latinx, like Kleenex. Latinx doesn't exist except in the minds of progressives. You can tell an out-of-touch progressive because they use the word Latinx. Why? Because Latinx is not a word that can be spoken in Spanish with the ending of the X. It is made up by white progressive academics. According to multiple surveys from multiple organizations, 3% or less of America uses it. It is not used in the Hispanic Latino community. If you're in Southern California, from what I'm told by demographers, Latino is very common. But if you're anywhere else in the country, Hispanic is very common. The media, of course, is dominated by progressive liberals who like to use Latino and for some reason think Hispanic is pejorative in some way. It's not. But the larger issue here is that Hispanic voters, in Texas in particular, increasingly are seeing themselves as white. What this story doesn't really pay attention to and really doesn't grapple with is that it's not just Texas. Now, this is Texas Monthly. You can't fault Texas Monthly for not doing a story about a different state not named Texas. Texas, after all, is like a whole other country. You got an entire magazine for it. Texas is awesome. I love Texas. One day I hope to be on the radio in Texas because I love Texas. But let's go north of Texas to a state that doesn't touch Texas, Colorado. From I-26, Trinidad, Colorado, the south end near New Mexico, over to the corner connection between Kansas and Oklahoma, north of the Oklahoma Panhandle. You got a lot of small areas, Campo, Colorado, Walsh, Colorado, Springfield, Colorado, Kim, Colorado. Those counties tend to be predominantly Hispanic counties. And those counties as well shifted toward the Republicans in 2020. It wasn't just South Texas. A lot of Democrats thought that Florida would become highly competitive because of the number of Puerto Ricans who, after the hurricane blew through a few years ago, Maria, I think it was, moved to South Florida. They really, I mean, you heard in the headlines, Florida was going to be highly competitive for the Democrats. It was going to become a Democratic state. Demography, after all, was destiny. Except it's not. Now, you will note the angle on this story is that in South Texas, Hispanic voters view themselves as white, therefore they vote Republican. There is truth to that. You can't deny it. It shows up in the surveys. But also, I know multiple people. I am blessed to have friends and family in Texas, and I am particularly blessed, one particular friend, but for whom I literally owe my career to the guy. One of just a handful of people I can say that about. If he's listening, he will know I'm talking about him. I think he would prefer me not to give him public credit, but he absolutely is. I admire the heck out of this guy. He's a wonderful human being. Smartest person I know. Is from, well, his family descends from, I guess you could say Mexico, from Central America. He works at a think tank in Texas. And we've had this conversation that you go down to the South Texas border. And by the way, I'm not alone in having this conversation with him. I've had it with a number of people from Texas, from South Texas, elected officials, Democrats and Republicans. And they tell me that if you want to see real racism, go to South Texas and see the interaction between the Hispanic community and the black community. There you will find issues. And I realize that I tread on dangerous ground by talking about this in an age of cancel culture, but multiple people I have talked to have said, given the interactions of the races and ethnicities in South Texas, it is natural for the Hispanic community to identify with the white community. Hispanic people in South Texas feel that they are put down upon not by white people in Texas, but by black people in Texas. And they have responded in kind by identifying more as white and voting Republican. And you're not going to get this in a lot of news publications. You're not going to get this in magazine surveys. You're not going to get this in public because it's one impolite and politically incorrect and dangerous territory among cancel culture to say. But it's true, and it shows up in the data, and it shows up in the conversations of people I know who have gone down and surveyed. But there is more to it than that. It's not just race relations that have caused this. It is also sociopolitical dynamics. Hispanic voters tend to be some of the most socially conservative people in the world. Hispanic voters in Central and South America, they may be fiscally liberal. They may be for big government spending. But they are devoutly religious people. And in fact, the Hispanic voter who leaves the Catholic Church and goes to a Protestant church is the most socially conservative person in America. The charismatic Protestant denominations, the Pentecostals, the Assemblies of God, and the like that have converted Hispanic populations have a stranglehold on Republican politics within their congregations because those people are hyper-socially conservative, and the drift of the Democratic Party to white progressive secularism is anathema to them. And this is reflected not just in Texas. It is reflected across the nation outside of major metropolitan areas on the coast, like in California and New York. In Florida, in Texas, in Colorado, even in Arizona and New Mexico, you are beginning to see a drift of Hispanic voters towards the GOP over social conservative issues and issues of ethnicity and race. And part of it is woke culture as well. What happens is you have a bunch of well-meaning progressive white people who, like the teacher on TikTok I played earlier, who says that if you are well-behaved and self-disciplined and respectful and you sit there passively and you learn from your teacher and you turn your work in on time, that that's white supremacy. Well, you know what? Hispanic people took the time to cross the border, sometimes, many times on foot, come here, find their way here legally or illegally, settle down and have legal citizens. They busted their butts to get here, and you're going to tell them you don't have to have hard work and discipline to get ahead in America? They know firsthand that if you want to get ahead in America, you got to be able to bust your ear in to work. You got to put in the time. You got to put in the work. Hispanic Americans are some of the hardest workers in this country, and you're going to tell them that their hard work and timeliness and the like is a product of white supremacy? They know you're nuts. And as the Democratic Party more and more embraces wokeism and rich, white, secular progressives, they turn off people like that. When it comes, this is back to Texas Monthly, when it comes to the Hispanic South Texans most likely to identify as white, or at least likely to identify as people of color, there's a fascinating generational dynamic. Younger, lighter-skinned Hispanic locals have shown up amid a sophisticated dialogue about race and power. They tend to be more liberal than their parents and grandparents, and many doubt whether identifying as people of color sufficiently acknowledges their privilege. Recently, when Sanchez helped her 19-year-old daughter fill out college applications, her daughter listed her race as white on a form that included a Hispanic or Latino option. "Mom, I feel really weird checking off Latina Hispanic because I'm just so white-looking," she told Sanchez. "I don't really feel threatened by racism." Older Hispanic Texans, many of whom survived intense discrimination, did not grow up around the sort of messages of racial pride familiar to their middle-aged children. Those who came of age in the first half of the 1900s in particular can remember a time when Mexican was frequently used as a slur. The vicious negative connotations led many to avoid the term. They also grew up at a time when assimilation and patriotism went hand in hand. Villarreal, who was in her 60s, told me she feels conflicted about her identity, but her cousin Xavier, who's 75, was blunter when I interviewed him. You young folks all want to call people Hispanic, Latino, white, brown, black, green, whatever. When we were growing up, nobody was Hispanic, Latino, Latina, brown, any of that. Everybody was American. I'm still an American here. And there you have it. If you're forcing Hispanic voters to choose what race they are, a lot of them are going to choose white. And what does whiteness, the media tell them, symbolize? Voting Republican. The media and the Democrats have done this to themselves, by the way. They've disassociated themselves from the plight of common, ordinary Americans. They've divided people by identity politics, and it's starting to backfire on them in places like Texas. They really thought there was going to be a wellspring of Democratic support from Latino, Hispanic communities in South Texas. And instead, they're all deciding, hey, you know what? If we got to pick a race, the Democrats want us to pick a race, we're going to pick white. And what do white people do? We vote Republican. And they've shifted the demographics of South Texas to the GOP by virtue of trying to push people into racial categories. Hello there. The phone number, if you want to be on the program, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. My buddy Bill, who I interact with a lot on Instagram, says, I need to try to get on the station I was talking about that had Al Sharpton. No! Here's the problem. You know, so I honest to goodness didn't, well, let me back up, set the stage for those of you just tuning in here. As I'm working my way through a list of talk stations in the country. I'm just reaching out, calling in some cases, emailing in some cases, saying, hey, I got a show. You can put it on. No charge to you. Very easy to run. Not a lot of obligation on your part. And it's great content. And I know my ratings are fantastic and your audience will love me. And as I'm going through, I'm occasionally stumbling on, and you know, it's very predictable, Northern California, Washington State, Massachusetts, the Chicago area, and now I'm in Minnesota, and the number of Michigan, the Ann Arbor area, the number of progressive talk stations. There aren't a ton, but it's all the same people, except this one I stumbled on in Detroit. And who's on air at the moment? Al Sharpton. I didn't even know Al had a radio show. I knew he had the MSNBC show. I didn't know he had a radio show. But when you look, it is people you've never heard of, and they are all like hyper nutty left wing people. There are a couple who are like known people. I guess one is Tom Hartman. I actually got his job. Actually, Herman Cain got his job, and I got Herman's job indirectly. Got his job years ago. That guy used to be on WSB Radio in Atlanta when it was kind of a free for all talk thing, and then they move decidedly to conservative talk, and the guy's now big on the West Coast and in these left-leaning cities. I'm just fascinated doing this. The number of mom-and-pop radio stations across America, everybody's told me, I've been in talk radio now for, heading into 11 years, the number of people who have written the obituary of talk radio. In fact, a lot of the major corporations who run talk radio stations, they're not really conservatives. They're just trying to make money off of conservatives. They clearly don't really understand conservatives. And some of them, I think, are just trying to destroy the entire business because they don't know what the heck they're doing and don't understand how to actually talk to conservatives. And it's kind of appalling to see. But then you've got these mom and pop stations out there around the country who clearly love talk radio and love being with talk radio and seeing it thrive. And it's just been really rewarding to interact with some of these people in far-flung places in America that I've never been to that I would love to go to one time. I've still never been to some of the places where I've got to feel like Dayton, Ohio and Tulsa. I've never been. I need to go. I need to get on Priority Jet and head off to see my affiliates at some point. All right, we will be back with more. We got to talk about some stuff in Washington State. You know, I said the other day, it seems like we have forgotten the lessons of 9/11. Everybody says never forget, and it seems like we've forgotten. This is from Fox News. Students at a Washington State high school wanted to mark the 20th year since the September 11th attacks by wearing red, white, and blue at a patriotic-themed game, but were refused because the event could, quote, unintentionally cause offense to some who see it differently, according to a report. Jason Rantz on KTTH Radio reported the event was canceled by an unnamed staffer at Eastlake High School in Sammamish, Washington State, at the last minute. A student told the show he was informed the red, white, and blue was going to be seen as racially insensitive and may affect people in a way that we will not understand, and for that reason, that we were to change our theme. The station posted a screen grab of an email from one of the school's associate principals to a parent that said she understands the sacrifices and values our flag represents, but I think they, the school leadership, did not want to unintentionally cause offense to some who see it differently. I mean, what do you even say about this? Seriously? Rance wrote that Chris Bede, the principal and the district's communications director, did not go into specifics about who exactly would be offended by seeing the players dressed in colors. Since it was not a home game, there was no opportunity to have an announcement about Patriots Day and to share why students were dressed in red, white, and blue, Shannon Parthmer, the district's communications director, told the station. Have we forgotten? Have we? I kind of think a lot of people have. You know, this ties into the progressives who think if you see the American flag now that it's a symbol of white supremacy. We are at a time where it seems people are emboldened to hate each other. There's a trend of people on the right, and it is, by the way, it's an online trend. I don't know that a lot of people in the real world are like this, but I do think a lot of people on social media really have decided that this is the way to win. It's to be nasty, to be mean. I see this more and more among a number of people on the right who think that no more Mr. Nice Guy. We need to be just as nasty to them as they are to us. We need to be mean. We need to be ruthless. You know, you need to be tough. You need to be courageous. You need to be brave. You need to stand up for convictions. You don't need to fold. You don't need to cower. You don't need to fear. You don't need to live in the shadow. But there's a big difference between being bold and brave and standing for your beliefs and being a jerk. There's a difference between standing firm and not being cowered by the mob and being mean to other people. The left. And this is where it gets. I think that there are a couple of things happening. One is a misinterpretation of Donald Trump's 2016 win that, well, he was the guy who was in your face, fight, 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 fight. He could be nasty and mean and brutal, and he won. And actually, there was a real rejection of Hillary Clinton and her nastiness. Donald Trump people could put up with Donald Trump. They were tired of Hillary Clinton. There is something to be said for Donald Trump's willing to stand firm and fight and not cower and not walk things back. Like a lot of people perceive Mitt Romney in 2012 as the media would gang up on him with something and he would fold and Donald Trump wouldn't fold. He would double down, and there's something to be said for that. But doubling down when you think you're right is not the same as being a biblical donkey, if you get my point. And I think, and by the way, it's mostly men in their 20s, 30s, and 40s on social media, some a few older, who have defined their lives by their internet persona, who've decided to be the biblical donkeys out there. And you know what's actually going to happen is you're going to turn people off altogether, and they're going to sit out. You're thinking, well, that's fine. Our side will vote, their side will vote, and we'll win. Actually, no. There are more than them than there are of you. This seems to be the political calculation that's lost on a lot of people on the right. The reason that polls of registered voters skew more to the Democrats than polls of likely voters is there are more registered voters who are Democrats than there are Republicans. And among likely voters, there can be more Democrats. So if you're going to distinguish yourself from the left by being a horse's rear end, good luck getting the independent, moderate people you need to build your coalition to beat the progressives, getting them to come out and vote for you. They're not going to. Why do I want to trade one horse's rear end for another? I might as well pox on both their houses. It's bad politics, but more than that, it's bad life. It's bad life. You know these people, and some of you may be these people, and my apologies that I'm about to insult you. I don't mean to. But there are a growing body of people out there who are so obsessed with politics all the time, they've stopped being nice people. They can't have a conversation unless it's about politics. I was telling somebody the other day that when I started in radio, I didn't think that I was going to actually be able to make some meaningful friendships anymore because people are going to be friends with a guy on the radio. And I've actually finally figured out over time that I can make friends with people on radio, and the way that I can distinguish and tell who is actually my friend versus who is friends with the guy on the radio is my friends aren't emailing and texting me all the time to find out about the politics of the day. The people who are friends with the guy on the radio are the ones who send me the links to the latest news item to get my thoughts on it. The people who define themselves and live their life by politics all the time are the people who are the most miserable. And why do we want to be like that? And then I've mentioned this before. For years I ran redstate.com for a decade. I hit 40 and decided it was probably time. I'd been doing it since I was 30. It was probably time for me to move on and focus on radio. But I noticed in those 10 years, the people that wrote on the site, the people I interacted with, there were certain people who they really defined themselves by their online persona. They were who they were online, offline. Even if they hadn't really been that person, their personality became that way. And I personally, I like to live in the real world. Yes, I'm on Twitter. Yes, I'm on social media. I'm on Instagram. You can follow me everywhere. E.W. Erickson. But I got a wife. I got kids. I got a front porch. I got a bourbon and cigar collection. I got friends. They come over. We interact. I live my life offline. I may reflect it online, but I don't need to be online being a caricature of myself. And more I find that a lot of people, that's what they do. And they're building their fame and success based on that persona. And that persona has over time taken a nasty turn, in large part in a response to the people on the other side who are nasty. Well, if you're going to be nasty, I'm going to be nasty. If you go low, I'm going to go lower. What does that get you? Into the sewer, I guess, where you smell like you know what. And it's just, I don't think it's a way to advance your ideas. I don't think it's a way to advance your agenda. I don't think it's smart politics for the GOP. I think at some point you have to recognize that Donald Trump, for all of his faults, warts and all, Donald Trump is a unique character in American politics. And Donald Trump has the latitude to behave in ways that you and I do not have the latitude in which to behave. Donald Trump was given a pass by the American people in ways that you or I will not. And we've seen this time and time again with other politicians on the right who act like Donald Trump and lose. And they think, I got to be just like that guy so I win. And then they wind up losing. Why? Because you're not Donald Trump. Say what you will about Donald Trump, but he's got a level of humor and charisma. You go into a room with Donald Trump, and I hear this story all the time, and I've experienced this myself when I've gone in the room with Donald Trump. He makes you feel like you're the center of attention. He, dare I say, he's very Bill Clinton like that. Now, I've never met Bill Clinton, but the people I know who know Bill Clinton say that when Bill Clinton walks into the room, it's like the spotlight is on you, not him. And he's reflected the spotlight off you. And he makes it all about you, and you feel seen and heard and loved when Bill Clinton's in the room with you. And Donald Trump is the same way. Now, I think Donald Trump would probably be offended by that comparison to Bill Clinton, but the stories are remarkably the same of people who go into the room with him, and he just makes it seem like it's all about them. What I find interesting is almost to a person, the people who try to do the impression of Donald Trump, the I'm going to throw punches and I'm going to be nasty and I'm going to be as mean as the other side. I'm gonna take what I've interpreted Trump's behavior to be to win and be successful for me. Almost to a person, those people walk into a room and it's all about them. It's always about them. I call me old-fashioned. I think there's room for grace and humility in politics. I think there's got to be room for saying you got it wrong. And I realize I am a dying breed of that because no politician on either side of the aisle wants to admit they're wrong anymore. But I think it gives you some level of credibility to say, you know what? I got that one wrong. And being willing to be charitable to other people. Charity is dying in this country. Grace is dying in this country. And I think the more we're willing to not be the jerk and just be nice to people, even if we disagree with them, be nice to them. I think you stand out a little more. I think you've got to. I'm opposed to this trend of people thinking you got to be mean to get your way. I think that we, frankly, if we're selling our proposition against wokeism right now, we're trying to make the case as a people that wokeism is bad. The wokes are the really demented, nasty people out there who want to cancel you if you disagree with them, who want to shame you, who want to bully you. You provide people an alternative that includes a smile and a welcome, people are going to gravitate to you. The wokes are the new racists. The wokes believe that everything is white supremacy unless proven otherwise. The wokes believe that if you engage in patterns of good conduct behavior and hard work, that you are embracing white supremacy even if you're not white. And then they get mad at you for doing it, and they try to correct you and bully you and shame you. And you got that versus our side with a laugh and a smile and joking and laughing at those people. I think it works for us to laugh at those people. I think it works for us to mock wokeness, to mock the other side, to laugh at the other side, to make them the butt of the jokes, not to be angry and scowl and scream, not to throw a punch at them. Now, if they've punched you, yeah, defend yourself. But how you go about doing that is a lot different from what the brain biblical donkeys of social media would have you believe. And one is going to get you votes and one is going to turn people off. And if you turn everybody off, if you burn everybody out, if you get everybody disgusted with your side and their side and they stay home, guess what, conservatives? Our side kind of is in the minority. We depend on independent moderate voters being with us because we're the sane people. And if we go insane, just like the people on the other side, they're going to stay home and we're going to lose. So don't be nasty. Don't be mean. Laugh at the other side. We always forget to laugh at the other side. They've given us so much lately to laugh about. How can we not laugh at them? Now, I don't want you to laugh. I want you to go to EdenPureDeals.com and get the Eden Pure Thunderstorm. It's an air purifier. It's filterless. You're not going to get roped into subscriptions for air filters. Some air purifiers, they're filter-based, and you got to get a subscription. It's like the ink cartridges. They sell you the air purifier for $50, and then the filters are like $100 a piece, and you go bankrupt within a month or two. You don't want to do that. That's why you want the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, because you can just wipe it out. It is filterless. The Eden Pure Thunderstorm eliminates odors, it eliminates bacteria, mold, you name it. It helps you with your allergies. Yes, it does help you with your allergies. I am a living testament to that. What you do is you go to EdenPureDeals.com and you click on my name. Right now you can get three of them and save $200. So you get the buy three, and here's the deal. You're going to have sticker shock. You're going to say, oh my, I can't afford this. And then you're going to put them in your shopping cart and click the orange checkout button. And you will see a discount code box. In that discount code box, you put Eric 3. And boom, you click the button and suddenly it takes $200 off and you get free shipping. So you can get one for upstairs, one for downstairs, one for your basement, and you can save $200. Get three of them for less than $200. Save $200. Get free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com. The checkout code is Eric 3. No space, just Eric 3. Hello there. It's me. You don't have enough time to call in now. I'm sorry. But you can call in tomorrow, perhaps 877-973-7425. I don't know if you guys have heard this, but there is a prediction floating out there among meteorologists that we had a rather mild summer in the eastern half of the United States and a heat wave in the western half. And there is a prediction that we're in for a pretty miserable winter. In fact, globally in the Northern Hemisphere, Europe as well, A number of scientists and meteorologists are saying they expect that we may have a particularly brutal winter with a lot of storms, not necessarily ice cold, but lots of winter storms. And there's a problem. Europe went all in on a green agenda. And by going all in on a green agenda, what has happened is they don't have enough fuel for the winter for their electrical grid. And a lot of countries are suddenly having to buy natural gas from Russia or fire up coal-burning power plants and go back to fossil fuels. You know, in Norway, they just had a big election, and the conservative party that had been in charge, and they're not conservative in the sense of American conservatism, but they're more conservative than the socialists who just beat them. And part of it was on global warming, that the people of Norway didn't think Norway was moving too fast. You see, Norway has a big fund that is shared among the people, like Alaska has with Alaskan oil. Norway is a powerhouse oil producer for the world and makes a lot of money for the nation on their oil reserves, and yet has embraced global warming and climate change and the need to end fossil fuels. And there's been a big debate there of how can we as a nation continue to pump out all this oil and claim we support something like the Green New Deal. So the labor, the socialists have been swept into power essentially to block further oil and gas production. Now, all that being said, Europe itself is having hard times because of an energy crunch. This is from Bloomberg. Europe's energy crunch is deepening, with gas and power prices hitting fresh records after the U.S. warned the continent isn't doing enough to prepare for what could be a dire winter. With about a month to go before the start of the heating season, Europe doesn't have enough natural gas in storage sites and isn't building inventories fast enough. Amos Hochstein, the U.S. State Department's envoy for energy security, said on Friday he was worried about supplies this winter. Europe's energy demand is rebounding across the world as economies reopen and people return to the office, while traders are scrambling to create a buffer to avoid a supply shortage they saw last winter. Gas stockpiles in Europe are already at the lowest level in more than a decade for this time of year, pushing up the cost of producing energy. The rally in European energy prices is just a taste of what's to come for other commodities. This ain't good. On top of that, in our country, you've got the rush on in certain states to get rid of fossil fuels altogether, and it's not actually setting the stage for economic or energy stability in this country. We need more nuclear power is what we need, and I don't know that we're actually going to be able to get it, because the left wants to put no investment into it.